motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taken to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Today is Friday, March 16th. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Nina Kurgia. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia. To our UBC campus, the residents of Vancouver, and all of our listeners on our newscast and podcast on our website at citr.ca.
Good evening. It's 5:01 and time for another full hour of independent news. Our headlines will cover news from the UBC campus, local news from Metro Vancouver, provincial and federal news from across Canada, as well as news from around the world. Also today, News 101 correspondent Coleman Ingram had the opportunity to talk to Andrea Potter from Rooted Nutrition, a Vancouver company that teaches classes on whole foods cooking, healthy diet, and nutrition. As well, we will be talking to Julian Law, one of the UBC students who will be interviewing George Strombolopoulos at the Arts Last Lecture later today, and Daryl McIver, founder of Peaked Interest, a new online flirting website that is quickly gaining traction.
All this, plus your weekday and weekend weather forecast, right here on News 101, your source
for independent news. And now, for your UBC campus news and your local headlines.
Usually, UBC bases admissions on spring report cards. However, due to the job action taken by BC teachers, UBC has announced that it will be accepting marks from completed grade 12 courses as well as those from grade 11, said Michael Bloom, UBC's undergrad admissions director, quote, "No one will be disadvantaged in the admission process with this approach. It is simply a way to get offers out earlier," end quote, noting that students will not be penalized for submitting grade 11 marks. However, Susan Lambert, president of BC Teachers Foundation, said the move was uncalled for, stating, quote, "Those marks have been given to administrators just as we've always done," end quote. UBC has also changed its admission basis, putting more focus on extracurricular activities. Early admission offers go out in mid-April.
The UBC Super Mileage team has big plans for their small vehicle. This team of engineering students has designed the Argo, an ultralight, super-efficient car which they hope will top 500 miles per gallon in an upcoming competition being held in Houston, Texas on March 29th. The team will be in the running against 130 other teams from North and South America in the urban concept category of the annual Shell Eco Marathon Americas. Last year, the team achieved 214 miles per gallon. Team Captain Connor Schellenberg-Beaver said, quote, "Our team has successfully implemented an electronic fuel injection system onto the Argo's 50cc gasoline-powered engine, which would help put us among the top contenders," end quote. The Argo is similar to a smart car, but is a single-passenger vehicle.
This week, over 2,000 university students from around the globe and 500 volunteers from Metro Vancouver gathered in Vancouver for the 21st World MUN, which is World Model United Nations, marking the first time Vancouver has hosted the conference. World MUN is a series of simulated sessions modeled after the structure of the United Nations system. Individuals take on the position of an assigned country and attempt to build a consensus to pass mock resolutions on current real-world issues. In a prepared video to the delegates of World MUN, or World MUN, however you want to say it, 2012, UN Secretary Ban Ki-moon spoke of the difficult issues that the world is facing today and how youth, representing over half of the world's current population, will play an integral role in shaping a more prosperous and secure future. World MUN was awarded to UBC in a bid 2 years ago and is the largest conference, student conference ever to be held in BC. World MUN was held in Taipei in 2010 and in Singapore in 2011. Delegates from 65 countries and 203 different universities attended this conference, which started on the 11th and ended yesterday on the 15th.
In local news, hundreds of teachers are gathering in Vancouver this weekend to discuss and formulate a response to the legalization of Bill 22. The bill, which becomes law by tomorrow, would make a six-month cooling-off period mandatory before negotiations between the BC Teachers Federation and the government continue. However, the BC Teachers Federation has been talking about taking action against this, ranging from province-wide withdrawal from volunteerism, including coaching sports and drama teams, to a straight walkout. Some parents have also expressed concern about grade 12 graduation ceremonies. Teachers say this action must continue, citing the negative effects the bill will have on learning and working conditions. When Bill 22 comes into effect, all Phase 1 job action will have to be discontinued. This includes refusal to write report cards or attend staff meetings, student supervision outside of class, refusal to communicate with principals, and several other jobs deemed to be administrative. Education Minister George Abbott said on Thursday, quote, "We treasure the fact that some teachers will give up their own time in order to coach hockey or soccer or basketball or volleyball, and we celebrate the fact that they do that, but they make the decisions as teachers. We can't demand it of teachers any more than we can demand it of lawyers and doctors or anyone else in the world," end quote. However, if teachers take this kind of action, they risk alienating parents and students alike and may lose support for their cause. Susan Lambert, BCTF president, said in an interview with the Vancouver Sun, quote, "There is no doubt in the minds of our members that they must, as much as possible, resist this legislation. If that's within our power, through the voluntary work that we do, then so be it. That's what I'm hearing from many of my members. So be it," end quote.
Members of the Musqueam First Nation have ended a three-day peaceful demonstration at the ancient Musqueam village and burial site that has been slated for condominium development. Musqueam Chief and Council held a meeting on Wednesday, March 14th to support an interim agreement between the Musqueam, the property developer, the City of Vancouver, and the province of BC. This agreement included a clause to ensure the protection of the ancient burial site that was found in January and to enable negotiations to be held on the future of the site and putting in place long-term protection. The proposed development is located on an ancient Musqueam village site, and archaeological work on the site was started earlier in the year after the developer was granted an archaeology permit by BC's archaeological branch in the Ministry of Forests, Lands, and Natural Resources.
The proposed removal of 2 hectares from the Stalmus Chief Provincial Park for a gondola has sparked heated debate in the environmental community. George Heyman, the executive director of Sierra Club BC, said, quote, "Removing land from a Class A provincial park sets an alarming precedent. We need to have a transparent public process rather than behind-the-scenes discussions between a private company and the BC government. BC parks should be protecting our public parks, not carving them up for profit," end quote. The proposed project, which would involve a gondola rising 820 meters from a base between the Stalmus Chief and Shannon Falls to the ridge northwest of Mount Heybridge, has a, quote, "great deal of support," end quote, in Squamish, according to Brandon Schultz, the South Coastal Regional Manager for BC Parks. In regards to the consultation process, he said, quote, "in most cases, the Sea to Sky Gondola Corporation has done most of the consultation for us. They've met with many of the key stakeholders. They've met with and they've gone through local community meetings. We've also asked them to consult with the First Nations involved, and they've gone and done that. And then we've also spoken to the First Nations just to verify their support for this project," end quote. However, Heyman finds this to be completely inadequate. Quote, "It's the responsibility of BC Parks and the government to hold consultations with the public, not a private proponent in whose interest it is to actually have the application for removal approved," end quote. Despite the criticism, Sea to Sky says they are continuing with the application process to get the permits to begin construction.
Surrey RCMP arrested one of the Lower Mainland's top 10 car thieves earlier this week. Police in Surrey saw the suspect, 34-year-old Kevin Michael Beach, Thursday, driving a vehicle with two male passengers. The officers recognized him despite an apparently blotched dye job. They then tracked him with the assistance of the Air One helicopter and had the suspect in custody by 7 p.m. Beach was wanted on charges in both Langley and Richmond of breaking and entering, theft, possession of stolen property, possession of controlled substance, and driving while prohibited. The other top 10 car thieves are still on the loose. Information about suspects is available at www.globaltvbc.com.
And that concludes your campus and local news. Now we go to an interview with Andrea Potter. News 101 correspondent Coleman Ingram had the opportunity to talk to her about Rooted Nutrition, a Vancouver company that teaches classes on whole foods cooking, healthy diet, and nutrition.
Andrea Potter is a registered holistic nutritionist and certified chef. After moving to Vancouver, she spent her first few years as head chef for Rada Eatery and has since started her own business, Rooted Nutrition, and now teaches whole foods cooking classes for the public. I caught up with Andrea to chat with her about her business and what nutrition and community mean to her. Hello, Andrea. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
That's good. So how long have you been in business?
I started Rooted Nutrition in the spring of 2010.
Okay, and what inspired you to start Rooted Nutrition?
I was inspired. I started in restaurants as a cook. I worked my way into healthy food. I was the chef at a vegan place in Vancouver called Rada Eatery for about 4 years, and that got me started on the healthy food path in my life. I started becoming a nutritionist at the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition around the same time, and I really started to see my food system and what's wrong with the way that we eat in North America as being something that needs to get fixed at the core of things, which I think is in the home kitchen, not in restaurants.
And that's what made you want to start teaching the cooking classes?
Exactly. Yeah, I could just see that what we were doing in the restaurant at Rada was really great in that we were offering whole foods to people, but I felt it was more empowering for people to take it into their own hands and start making their own health choices at home.
And so since you've started the business, how has the reaction been going to the cooking classes?
Reaction's been amazing. The first year of business, I was more of a mobile business, and I would go here and there. I even taught in different garden spaces and public spaces, colleges, places like that. And it was going really well. Things really gelled in last September when I formulated all of the classes into a curriculum. So people can drop in and take one class, or they can do all of the classes or little packages of six or what have you. And that is when the community started to really gel around whole foods.
So since starting the full curriculum of classes last fall, where are you at now?
We're in our second round of cooking classes in the curriculum. I'm excited about starting our third. We are growing so rapidly that we've actually had to find a second venue. So the classes had all been happening at Rada, which is in Chinatown, for, you know, on weekends, Saturdays and Sunday classes. And we're expanding, so going to be doing some classes on Wednesdays at this new place called the Woodland Smokehouse and Commissary. It's on Pender and Commercial. And I'm really excited about that space because it's a 10,000-foot industrial kitchen. So there's going to be a lot more availability for people to be doing hands-on projects. And, yeah, I think it's just going to add a whole new dimension. Rather than just demonstrations, we're going to be able to get a lot more foodie.
So both venues, Rada itself is a yogic community. The Woodland Smokehouse Commissary is a community kitchen as well. With a lot of different cooks getting in and promoting their own businesses. How do you feel Rooted Nutrition fits in with this sense of community that these venues you're in have developed as well?
I feel like it's a really good fit. I feel like actually having part of my classes at what's just a yoga center, and then the other part in
more of a foodie culinary kind of place is really bringing the two parts of me together, as far as my interest in holistic nutrition and my interest in food itself. So, yeah, I feel like the community that of people who are starting to gather around for my classes are going to be interested in both places for different reasons. They have really different vibes, but they're attracting people who are interested in local food, healthy lifestyle, that kind of thing.
So in this curriculum that you've developed, what kind of subjects do you focus on in your classes?
I am really trying to demystify what healthy food means, because I feel like we're suffering from rather than a lack of information, information overload about nutrition and diet. There's a lot of confusion and there's a lot of fads out there. So all of the classes focus on, when I say whole foods, I mean wholesome foods, so foods in their most natural state, not omitting any particular food group, and just focusing on preparation that makes for best digestion and best taste, most appealing. Focusing on food that's in season and local as much as possible. The way that I've organized the curriculum is by food theme. So our first class is ancient grains, and we start by learning how to prepare different kinds of grains. And then we have, you know, an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert that we make and taste in class. Then we move on to proper preparation of beans for digestion. Again, appetizer, entree, dessert. Later on in the curriculum, we get more into interesting things like sprouting, how to sprout foods and why we do that, and how to ferment foods, which is one of my favorite classes. It talks about community, culture, fermenting foods in a really interesting way. All cultures ferment food. I could go on about it.
So that's culture and community in a very literal sense as well.
Exactly. I could really nerd out about culture and community as far as fermentation is involved. And yeah, I call it preserving food traditions as well, because the theme through a lot of the classes is methods of preparation that all cultures have in common. North America is a really new blend of cultures, and we're almost in this awkward adolescent phase as far as food is concerned. We don't have a real identity yet, so we're just stealing little pieces from here and there, not quite getting it right as far as our food identity goes. So I'm looking to older cultures in doing basic things like making soups, how to properly prepare grains, and old food preservation methods for wisdom on how we should eat.
So with so much information available online for free and the popularity of the Food Network and things like that, what draws people out to your cooking classes?
I feel that there's a real need for community that people aren't getting from sitting by themselves in front of their computer trying to figure out what's for dinner, searching through a million recipes for chicken cacciatore or whatever. I feel like people, traditionally we got together as families and did food preparation blitzes. Like when harvest came, people worked together to get it prepared, preserved for the winter. Generations of people cooked together. And now it's primarily one person doing all of the work in the kitchen. It's a lonely endeavor. A lot of us even live alone. We don't get the pleasure of dining with family a lot anymore. And so I feel that the real live cooking class helps to bring people together in a community, kind of like an urban tribe of eaters and food preparers. And I think it feels really good. And so from a holistic sense, community cooking classes, eating together, makes a lot of sense. Part of the purpose of the cooking classes is for people to go home, share this information with their friends and family, host cooking parties themselves, make dinners for people to sit together and eat rather than eating in front of the TV or eating in front of the computer.
So for any listeners out there who are interested in getting involved with your classes, how would they get in touch?
Check out rootednutrition.ca. There's descriptions and menus for all of the classes on there, and you can register online.
Thank you very much, Andrea.
Thanks, Cole.
Those are your UBC campus and local headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick break, but stay tuned for an interview with Julian Law, as well as your weekend weather forecast.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Flaming Angels Boutique, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, RX Comics, Temple of the Modern Girl, and the Wallflower Modern Diner.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
The alphabet has only 26 letters. With these 26 magic symbols, however, millions of words are written every day.
This month in Discorder, this month's cover features the experimental punk band Shearing Pinks, three dudes who have been an underground Vancouver staple since 2005 and have over 50 releases, big and small, under their belts. Also featured this month are The Bleeding Hearts, who released their debut EP this month, a review on Wim Wenders' latest film, the 3D dance epic Pina, an update on the Rio's ongoing battle to show movies and serve liquor, not to mention a bunch of excellent show and album reviews, and all of your regular features. Pick up your beautiful and free copy of Discorder at any Friends of CITR business, or if you've gone paperless, don't forget to check out Discorder at discorder.ca. Discorder, that magazine from CITR, supporting local music for over 25 years. Any UBC student knows that the year begins optimistically. In your arms tonight. But by the end of it, you're ready for a little. Any smart UBC student will therefore know that it's best to get your tickets early to the annual AMS Block Party, featuring Mother Mother, Masterpack, DJ Headspin, The Boom Booms, and more. Thursday, April 5th on the McInnes Field, your AMS brings you the fifth year of music, partying, and hopefully some sunshine. Early bird tickets available at the Outpost until March 9th, and general tickets available thereafter. For more info, search for the AMS Block Party on Facebook. The fifth annual AMS Block Party is proudly sponsored by CITR.
We're going to switch gears a little here. We're going to continue with our national news, and then we are going to go on to our interview with Julian. So, in national news,
the Canadian Avalanche Center has issued a special warning for this weekend. Backcountry users are cautioned to be disciplined and to make conservative slope choices, although Carl Klassen with the CAC suggests it is best to stay off the slopes altogether. This warning is the third in 4 weeks and comes after a string of avalanches killed three people in unrelated incidents. Klassen said, quote, "We just need to let all this new snow settle down for several days. Exactly when you think it's going to be the greatest day in the world, nice blue skies and sunny, is when you need to be the most careful," end quote. The warning extends to Monday and covers all the interior BC mountains from Mackenzie and Chetwynd south to the U.S. border and west of the Alberta border to Pemberton and Hope.
Last Tuesday, an email was sent to thousands of certified general accountants containing the personal data about 4,600 of its students. The email, which contained an Excel spreadsheet, inadvertently changed names, addresses, job titles, employers, citizenship statuses, and student ID numbers. When informed of the error, the CGA immediately sent out a second email requesting students to destroy the email. But many students are unconvinced their information is safe. Student Allison Chang said, quote, "I was concerned. I was hoping that other students wouldn't do anything about the information, but you never know. They could take this information and sell it," end quote. A spokesperson in response to these concerns said, quote, "Our initial investigation shows that based on a threat matrix published by their office, the risk to identify theft, fraud, hurt or harm, and other damages is relatively low, as no personal information was released in the conjunction with any social insurance numbers, driver's license numbers, credit cards, or any financial information," end quote. As an added precaution, the CGA is changing all student ID numbers. Any students concerned are advised to visit the CGA website for more details. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here at CITR News 101.
The folks at the Waldorf Hotel invite you to join them Thursday, March 29th for The Coat Hangers and White Mystery. The Coat Hangers are an all-girl quartet from Atlanta who will hook you with their unaffected, unpretentious, and deliciously sloppy form of rock. White Mystery is a brother-sister rock and roll duo all the way from Chicago. Doors for Coat Hangers and White Mystery are at 9, and advanced tickets are available through thewaldorfhotel.com. Again, that's The Coat Hangers and White Mystery, Thursday, March 29th at the Waldorf Hotel in Vancouver.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Welcome back to CITR News 101 right here on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Claire Eagle, and right now we have Julian Law in studio with us. Julian is lucky enough to be able to interview George Strombolopoulos tonight for the Arts Last Lecture. So Julian, why don't you tell us a bit about how you even got that sweet gig in the first place?
Pretty much to start that, you had to like backtrack about 2 months, 2-3 months, end of classes. Grabbed a beer with Mary Leong, who was like communications director for Arts Undergraduate Society. She mentioned that they were going to get him for a lecture later in the year and that there would be a video contest. Then fast track about 3 months, and at about 2 a.m. before the entries were due, and I'm sitting in my room trying to make a video last minute because I just decided, take a shot.
Are you a fan of George?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, I kind of caught the tail end of his Much Music thing, but He ran the punk and metal show, which was always fun to watch. And then he's just interviewed, like, everybody, so the hour and the new show, Strombolopoulos Tonight, is just always fun to watch.
We were actually lucky enough to run into George here earlier on the station, and we had a nice little chat with him. We told him that you were coming on the air later, and he asked us to let you know that there's really no off-limits questions. He says that he really wants you to dig in the meat, and, like, any hesitation you might have, just really drop it and go for it. So, like, keeping that in mind, like, are you allowed to give us a sample of what you're going to be asking tonight, or what kind of aim or sort of angle you're going to take?
Yeah, because I'm not the only interviewer. I'm doing it as well with Sasha Rose, who's an undergraduate, and Kata Dak, who's graduating of journalism. And so we've kind of got together to compile some questions. Like, the theme of the lecture is, like, the send-off for the, like, graduating class and a lot of things. So we want to aim and probe him a lot about, like, his own development, more in a general theme of, like, how he overcomes stuff, what he chooses, career choices. Because a lot of the nitty-gritty stuff can be asked and has been asked previously. Mm-hmm. And then we also got just some, like, list of series of, like, offhand rapid-fire questions. If we have time, we're going to give him a shot and see if...
Well, I'm sure he'd like to hear the offhand questions maybe before... Now that you know that he wants to do those intense questions, you guys can add some of your own.
Well, in any previous interview, Strombo's just been, like, no holds in the bar with what he said. Mm-hmm. Like, I was watching an interview with him in hip-hop radio the other day, and he went on, like, a 10-minute conversation about what music he would like to play if he got picked up a girl at the bar when they're bonking.
Do you remember what he said?
It actually depended on the girl. His best response was, if it's a really awesome chill girl, he'd actually go for NWA and just full blast it.
Well, I mean, it's good. I mean, you can see that, like, you've really done your research here, so I guess... On a larger scale, what's the significance of having George Strombolopoulos here for, I guess, people in arts and our campus as a whole?
I think the real push for it is just that he's this fairly young guy, he's 39 only, and so far he has, like, ripped through every medium of broadcasting. He's done a crazy amount of humanitarian work. Like, this week or last week, he got named the Economic Forum's one of the youth global leaders of the world for 2012. And he's, like, one of three Canadians out of, like, 200 that were nominated in the world.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's just done all this, and he does it without that sort of superficialness. It always looks genuine. He always really puts the effort into there. And so I think that's, like, a really good idea for anyone, as everyone's trying to go out there and figure out what to do with that piece of paper you get.
Fair enough.
Awesome.
On a more personal level, what's the significance of that for you, and like, what does it mean for you to be interviewing him?
The huge draw to me to him is just that, like, he's been this character that I could kind of sort of identify with, mm-hmm. in a sense, because he's kind of got that, like, punky look. He used to have his nose ring, all that stuff. And it's cool because, like, I somehow extrapolate my life to his, and I'm like, 20 years down the road, am I going to have to go along those sort of choices, mm-hmm. what maturity might be for a guy that grew up, you know, mm-hmm. listening to punk metal and then taking it and going somewhere with it.
Yeah, definitely.
How long did it take you guys to come up with these questions, or how did you said you just met up together? Do you have some of your own personal questions that you put into those that you had for all of you?
Yeah, for sure. Like, we've met a few times. We had, like, on the web, we had, like, a Google Doc going. We're just shooting questions left and right because we weren't sure what direction we were going to take, and it just collaborative brainstorming for, like, hours to kind of go. So, I mean, like, some of my personal questions for him was, like, one of them was specifically, like, what would 16-year-old George Stropoulopoulos, because I'm not sure if everyone knows this, but when he was going out of high school, his aspiration was to be a funeral director.
In high school?
Yeah.
Gosh,
a funeral director. And then he somehow ended up in media, so I'm just like, what would, like, you know, high school George think of you now? Other things was, like, what was your mom's reaction when you showed up with a piercing? Because apparently his mom was a little tight on some of the Teenage Rebellion stuff. So personal questions to see how we compare and contrast.
Cool. Well, we're really excited to see what you do tonight. I guess just for our listeners, can you just give them a rundown of, like, what the event is, where it is, and, like, tickets and so on?
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be at 7:30 at the Old Auditorium. If you check it out on Arts One Last Lecture 2012, there might still be tickets you can nab online. In addition to that, we're trying to incorporate some social media and make it a little more interactive. So we're actually taking questions. So if you want to send them into Twitter, hashtag Arts One Last Lecture 2012.
Oh, cool.
You can actually submit some questions that might be read off. Mm-hmm. As the theme of the...
How many, can I ask? Do you know how many yet? Or is it just you'll see the ones you like?
Well, we're also going to have, like, a segment where anyone in the audience can go up to the mic and Q&A.
Right.
But we're kind of having this as an extra side. If something pops up that we haven't quite addressed, mm-hmm. or, you know, if the Twitter feed just completely blows up with the same question, we'll put it in.
Right.
Okay. Awesome.
Cool. Well, yeah.
Well, we wish you luck.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
We'll
Thank
be
you.
Rooting you on.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. So once again, that was Julian Law. He's a UBC student, and he's going to be interviewing George Stropoulopoulos tonight at the Arts One Last Lecture at 7:30 at the Old Auditorium, as he said. Yeah, thanks for coming in. So we're going to take a quick break, but please do stay with us. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM.
This will just take a minute. Introducing Serious Issues. Tuesday, March 20th at the Waldorf Hotel in the Tiki Bar. From 8 p.m. to late, Serious Issues is a party for young people interested in serious issues and partying. Featuring drinking, dancing, and short multimedia talks on creative actions by people from Adbusters, LeadNow.ca, DeSmogBlog, and Stuff Harper Did. Cover is cheap. Tickets are available at the door or through Eventbrite.ca. RSVP on Facebook to Serious Issues. And with DJs Cam Dales and Cameron Reed, the party is sure to be seriously good. That's all. We can get back to the serious dinner stuff. Thanks. Thank you.
Welcome back, and now we have Phil from the Storm Club. He'll be telling us our weekday and weekend weather forecast. Hi, Phil.
Hey. Thanks for the intro, and good evening, listeners. We are quite fortunate, situated where we are on the Pacific coast today, as two low-pressure systems came in. Neither of the system's centers, or eyes, if you will, was directly over us. Showers, much cloud cover, and increasing winds and shifting directions are expected as we continue into the weekend. But the most severe weather one would expect is a thunderstorm tonight. But even that seems unlikely. Generally, south-southwest-oriented winds could reach 20 kilometers per hour on Sunday, but temperatures should remain steady throughout, around 5 degrees. So now here's your three-day weekend weather forecast for UBC. Tonight, cloudy with a 70% chance of precipitation, low of 3. Saturday, 40% chance of showers, around 1 millimeter of precipitation total, high of 6, low of 3. Sunday, also 40% chance of precipitation, high of 4, low of 3. So that's your weekend weather forecast for UBC, brought to you by the UBC Storm Club. Currently, it is around 7 degrees on UBC campus. From home, reporting for News 101, I'm Phil Chang.
Great. Thanks so much, Phil. It's always great to have our weather forecast on there. So now we go back to our national headlines here on News 101.
It was announced today in a government release that Education Minister George Abbott left today on a mission to China, intending to support the province's goal of increasing the number of international students in BC by 50% over the next 4 years. Abbott will be meeting with education officials across the country in order to drum up support for the initiative, as well as create more opportunities for Canadian students to study abroad. Abbott said, quote, China has a new innovative plan for education that places great emphasis on opening Chinese education to the outside world through student exchanges and collaboration. Our message will be that British Columbia is the ideal position to help the Chinese government meet its educational objectives. International students can benefit from BC's world-class K-12 education system, whether they study in BC or attend our offshore schools. This mission will help us to refine and finalize our jobs plan strategy for international education, particularly with respect to the K-12 sector. End quote.
In a report released today, TD Bank warned that overvalued housing markets in several Canadian cities and high household debt posed a, quote, clear and present danger, end quote, to Canada's economy. The study by the bank's chief economist, Craig Alexander, proposes the government introduce measures to keep personal debt levels from rising further. The report flags Vancouver as the market with the greatest risk of a housing price correction because of an influx of foreign buyers, likely in the order of 10 to 15%. Alexander said that the household debt growth over the past decade has been fueled not as much by credit card borrowing, but largely by loans secured by real estate and home equity lines of credit in particular. Alexander also predicted that the ratio of debt to personal disposable income, which is now above 150%, is likely to reach, by late 2013, the 160% peak experienced in the US and UK before the real estate corrections occurred.
Those are your national headlines. We're going to take a quick break and stay tuned for our interview next
with Daryl McIver from Peaked Interest right here on News 101.
Join this year's BFA and BA Visual Art graduating class at their fundraising event on February 16th from 7 to 11 p.m. at the CBC Studio 700. Join the graduating classes for a silent art auction and live music. So grab a drink with your friends and enjoy the exciting art and music at the event located at 700 Hamilton Street in Vancouver. All funds raised will go towards the graduation show opening this April.
How much do you know about bikes?
Everything?
Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Talk about swanky. It's the Poliera Spring Masquerade and Strut Off, March 24th at the Rickshaw Theater. Five vintage clothing stores will compete in a friendly fashion show, each representing a different era and theme. Showcase your vintage best, too, with live music from Mocha Only and local faves, Prisoners, with prizes and good times for all. Proceeds go to two downtown Eastside nonprofits, Hastings Crossing BIA, and our social fabric. How cool is that? Advance tickets are available at Eventbrite Online or Zulu, Neptune, and Red Cat Records. It's the Poliera Spring Masquerade and Strut Off, March 24th at the Rickshaw Theater.
And welcome back to CITR News 101, right here on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Claire Eagle. I'm in here in studio with Nina Kirgia. And I have on the line Daryl McIver from Peaked Interest Media, a new website that's really taken our campus at least by storm. So welcome, Daryl.
Thank you.
So first of all, for our listeners who aren't too familiar with Peaked Interest, can you tell us a bit about the site?
Yeah, so Peaked Interest is something that we launched just recently, and it's basically a web application that allows any individual to make contact or make an introduction with somebody that they may not have otherwise been able to do. And basically we're saying to do that, and we're suggesting through candid photography. And it's a problem that we feel a lot of men and women have, especially around campus. And we're trying to find the best solution using today's technology.
And I know that it's you working on it as well as a UBC undergraduate right now who's doing a lot of the software stuff. So how did you guys meet up and come up with this idea?
It was something that we had kind of cultivated back in the summer. We basically started with this problem, and we're trying to find the best way to solve it. And there was a group of us, and we were talking to numerous different people, especially on campus, trying to find what we think would be the best way. And then we came up with it, and then starting September, we really got into it, and yeah, like I said, just launched quite recently.
So were you thinking out of this website, are you guys thinking of doing some advertising and making potential profit off the website?
Possibly in the future, but I mean, right now it's more of a, we see it as an experiment, just trying to get as much feedback as we can from especially the user base, and trying to get people as comfortable as possible in which features they may want to see and which features they may want to take out.
And how, yeah. Sorry.
Go on.
How has the feedback been thus far?
It's been good and bad, obviously. I mean, there's people that are uncomfortable initially with the idea, especially upon first hearing it. Mm-hmm. But once I think you get on the website and you really get a feel for what we're trying to accomplish and what our main goals are and how private it really is with users' information.
Sorry, speaking of privacy, I know you guys have had a lot of, obviously, backlash in terms of privacy because, I mean, there's all these people who have their pictures now up on the website and mm-hmm. who didn't want that in the first place. So, I mean, what's kind of your take on that?
Well, obviously it was something that we knew going in that we were going to be something that we would have to discuss. We was something that's we're really reigniting and going to be at the center of that privacy debate, online privacy. And it's interesting because whether it's an unattributed photo or whether it's the way our personal data might be used, it's that gray line as to where online privacy in the sand is really difficult to tell these days. And I think we really, all of us need to find an educated opinion on where we feel that might be.
Have you had any complaints so far? I know that with every picture, there's a button, a report button. So I'm just wondering how often that's clicked or how often you're getting people who are concerned with their privacy issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what's quite interesting for us is there's been one person, and that was yesterday, who had reported, could you please take my picture down? I'm not comfortable with it. But on the other hand, we've had 20 people now that have recognized themselves and as opposed to hitting the report button, they've signed up to the site, uploaded a profile picture, and tried to make that connection. So it's really interesting for us to see that people are comfortable with it and realize that it's, you know, somebody said something positive about them, and it is quite an accomplishment to have it up there now.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah, so it's interesting that way.
It definitely seems like you've been able to tap into this, I guess, sort of some of this need that wasn't really being filled. I mean, I think especially in our generation, we definitely know everyone sort of does the creep on Facebook and everyone looks at other people's photos online. So it's very interesting to have that I guess, method to connect people that wasn't really available before. So what do you see in the future? I know you're seeking to expand to UVic, if I'm correct, and then are you hoping to grow from there as well?
Yeah, I think so. What we want is to keep it within universities. I mean, we chose UVic as well because UBC is quite a large campus and a big mm-hmm. community. So we're really interested to find out the interaction at a smaller community like UVic and really see, you know, how people are going to interact that way. We're developing a mobile app right now that should be out within the next, hopefully, 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
It'll be interesting to see how people utilize that as well. But keeping within universities is big for us because, obviously, that's a demographic that may be interested in something like this. Mm-hmm. And also the validation of just having that email address and knowing that it's a fellow student that's on the website, I think makes a big difference.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you have any concerns about, where this is taking us in terms of the future? Because now instead of people who are introverted, instead of getting out there and learning how to communicate with other people in the real world, all of a sudden they're becoming even, it's almost adding to them being introverted because instead of going out there and meeting people at parties, they're creepily taking pictures of other people
understand. And I think like very, very generally, that's a very good question. I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind that it's all we're doing is really making it that introduction. We allow you to share contact info and then you take it from there. So really it's that introduction and it's not something that we really want to replace, a face-to-face, meeting, first introduction. It's something that's a tool in which if you're in a hurry, that person's in a hurry. Obviously, you might not be in the mood to make an introduction, might not get that feeling from the other individual at that moment. How can you prolong that and maybe have another shot? I mean, if you feel comfortable at that time and you feel, you know, this person's very interesting, let's just go talk to them, then by all means, I think that's the ideal situation for everybody. But whether that always occurs, I think a lot of us can agree it's not always opportune.
Have you ever had the kind of that happen to you, that somebody else takes a picture of you and you didn't even know?
Well, not that I've outright seen, but the possibility of it's there. I mean,
because it's pretty uncomfortable. I actually, my picture was on there a couple of weeks ago, and I have to say, I wasn't very comfortable about it. And it's just kind of awkward because you're wondering, then after you're wondering who else is potentially trying to take a picture, like what's happening. It's just kind of awkward. I don't know. How would you respond to that?
So you found a picture of yourself. Is that right?
Yes.
So your question is, you see it on this website, perhaps is my picture somewhere else and what else might be happening with, you know, especially with the use of mobile phones, is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, because then all of a sudden when you're walking around and you see someone on the phone, you're paranoid. You're like, oh my God, what if they're taking a picture of me? Because if you're uncomfortable with it, I understand maybe some people are okay with it and make a profile. And
well, I think it's also interesting how it might also just, I guess, change the dimensions. And if it gets that big, sort of the dimensions in which we interact on that level. I mean, I think you look at what, I guess, Facebook did for cameras at parties and so on. I mean, it's the idea of sharing photos online really changed how people interact with cameras. So I'm wondering maybe if you foresee the use of, I guess, using phones to take pictures sort of on the street like this, do you think that's also going to, do you see it having an impact in the way we sort of use our phones as cameras and so on?
I think it'll be interesting to see how it really plays out. And it's going to be something, I think, when you look at it in 10 years, it'll be interesting, but even 1 or 2 years. I mean, it's that introduction using technology. And mm-hmm. I think reality is just slowly becoming much more ingrained into, let's say, take dating, for example. I mean, before it was something where you would get somebody's phone number and you'd actually pick up the phone and call them. Now it's with Facebook, you get somebody's name. Now you're add them on Facebook and you cultivate this relationship digitally. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us can agree too. You get somebody's phone number. A lot of people don't call; they text messages.
Yeah.
This is to nonverbal communication, and it'll be interesting to see what that progression, you know, really move forward with.
And I mean, whether
it's pictures or is it going to be some other type of technology that allows us to connect with people that we may not have been able to before.
whether this is positive or negative, I do salute you and your friends who made it, because that you're definitely moving forward with your idea.
Yeah, you know, and I appreciate that. And I think a lot of people might not say, hey, this is a fun thing. And, you know, if you see yourself, it's a positive thing. But, you know, that's ultimately what our goal is, you know, if someone sees your picture up there one day and it's somebody says something nice, I mean, it should make you feel good. I know that's an audacious goal for all of us to feel that way, but that's just kind of our thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, it was great to have you on, Nina, and I really enjoyed talking to you, Daryl.
Thank you.
Yeah, so best of luck with Peaked Interest as it moves forward.
No, I appreciate that.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
So once again, that was Daryl McIver, the founder and CEO of Peaked Interest Media, which is a new website where people basically upload photos of people they see on the street. Just sort of, it's like, I guess the way we had it described in studio was like the website Like Little, but with photos. And he's working with a undergraduate here at UBC who's his software designer, and the website's gained a lot of traction. So
we'll see where that will take us in the future. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go now back to our national headlines. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Nina Krigia. The Conservative government looks to be backing away from the controversial commitment it made to replace the aging CF-18 fighter bombers with F-35 fighter jets. As the anticipated cost of 65 F-35 jets has increased, the government has stated that, quote, all options are on the table, end quote, to keep the cost of replacing the jets under $9 million. Julian Fantino, the minister in charge of buying military equipment, said the government has the flexibility to move up or back in the line to buy the new aircraft, or buy more or fewer than the planned 65 planes. He added that no contracts have been signed yet and no orders have been placed. The Conservatives say they still believe the high-tech jet is the best choice to replace CF-18, but recently their stance over the country's more costly military purchase has softened.
The Department of Foreign Affairs is warning gay travelers in Canada to tread carefully in St. Petersburg, Russia, in advance of the Russian city's incoming laws banning homosexual quote-unquote propaganda. The vaguely written law cracking down on displays and perhaps even public discussions of homosexuality will come into effect in St. Petersburg on Saturday. Offenders under the new law risk arrest, criminal prosecution, and fines of between 5,000 and 500,000 rubles, which is $167 to $16,763. Although homosexuality was decriminalized in Russia 20 years ago, this law was signed amid calls for anti-gay laws from Russian politicians and the Orthodox Church. The city's explanation is that the law is designed to protect children. However, this law is quickly being protested globally, with online petitions from sites such as AllOut.org quickly gaining traction.
Those were your national headlines, and now we are going to move to FSRN headlines. These headlines will cover Mexican activist leader murdered who campaigned against a Canadian-owned mine.
Okay, Mexico, a well-known environmental activist, was murdered Thursday night in a highway ambush near his hometown. Bernardo Vázquez Sánchez has been leading a campaign against the Canadian-owned Fortuna silver mine in San José del Progreso, southeast of Mexico City. Shannon Young reports.
32-year-old Bernardo Vázquez Sánchez, a vocal opponent to a Canadian-owned mining project, was shot multiple times in the chest when armed men ambushed his car along a highway which connects his hometown of San José del Progreso to the regional hub of Ocotlán. His brother, Andrés Vázquez, and his cousin, Rosalinda Dionisio, both active in the local struggle against the mine, have been hospitalized with gunshot wounds. Bernardo Vázquez died upon arrival at a regional clinic. The men responsible for the attack have not been identified, but the organization Vasquez led, the Coordinating Committee of the United Towns of the Valley, has meticulously documented the actions of a group they say has been funded and armed by mining interests. In a recent interview with FSRN, Bernardo Vázquez Sánchez described how in 2006, the then-mayor of San José del Progreso signed a deal with mining company representatives without consulting the town's residents.
Nos dimos cuenta hasta el 2008. El 2008 prácticamente fue un año de We found out about it in 2008. That year was marked by demands and peaceful protests against the mayor. In 2009, with the occupation of the mine, the pressure became more notable. And it was in May of 2009 when we found out about the pro-mine organization. And it was that month when we began to see armed men who belonged to said organization. Now, those armed men who belong to that organization are now part of the town governing council, and they've now brought in guys from other towns to act as their gunmen.
The mine in San Jose del Progreso operates as Minera Cuscatlan, a subsidiary of Vancouver-based Fortuna Silver. Bernardo Vasquez showed FSRN a case file of documentation, including photographs of men with weapons reserved exclusively for military use. His group had identified the men by name and, in the face of state government inaction, had planned to deliver the evidence to the Canadian embassy. While opposition to the mining project is a main thrust of the Coordinating Committee of the United Towns of the Valley, it's part of a larger set of demands for greater self-determination and territorial control in Oaxaca, Mexico's most indigenous state. Again, Bernardo Vázquez Sánchez.
The problem with the San Jose mine isn't just limited to San Jose del Progreso. It's a problem for Oaxaca. It's a nationwide problem. It's practically a war declared on the small towns and their people because government officials, in their eagerness to look productive, are giving away our gold like in times past.
The gold and silver mine in San Jose began full operations in September 2011. On its website, Fortuna Silver states it expects the mine to produce 1.7 million ounces of silver and 15,000 ounces of gold this year. Although opposition to the mine will likely continue, Thursday night's murder of Bernardo Vázquez Sánchez means local movements of mostly indigenous small farmers in the Ocotlán Valley have lost a young and committed leader. Shannon Young, FSRN, Oaxaca.
Thanks to Free Speech Radio News for bringing us those international headlines. Daily headlines and their full newscast can be found at their website, fsrn.org. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca.
And that's our program for today, March 16th. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments or get involved with the show or give us an important news tip, please contact us through our email, news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows at citr.ca as well. You can also listen to our past interviews on the News 101 page on mixcloud.com. For more independent news, join us on Monday and Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Nina Kurgia. Today's show was produced by Morgan Yee.
And thanks to Morgan for her great headlines as well.
Yes, and Iqbal and CJ, thank you. Thanks for listening. You are listening to CITR News 101.9 FM.
Stay tuned for Stranded at 6 p.m. right here on CITR.